We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Ahoy, Verballers! This is your Captain Ty Hildebrandt. I am joined, as always, by my Lieutenant Dan Rubenstein. Welcome aboard this college football experience that we like to call the Twos Cruise. Don't forget, if you like the Solid Verbal, subscribe to the show out on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, all the usual hotspots wherever you like to find your podcasts. We are a college football show. We do three shows a week. This is the one where we look back, try to put it all in perspective, figure out what all the results mean. We've also got a Thursday preview show, as well as a Sunday afternoon recap show, where we try to really give you the full holistic picture, Lieutenant Dan, of what's going on in and around the world of college football. How are you?
Ty, I want to destock this celery of performance that we're doing right now after I peeled back the carrot of digital audio on Sunday. I'm good. We started our connection. I guess I'll keep it on theme. I went down to your stateroom. I went down to your cabin and you had been struggling with your voice.
Yeah,
some
that's
exhaustion.
Right. That's right.
And then you hit record and you go, ahoy! And you are fully in. So I want everybody to know that the sacrifice that Ty is giving to you, all systems go, man your battle stations. Oh, foreboding. It's very real, Ty. You are dedicated to the craft, and I appreciate it.
I am dedicated to the craft. I have so much Tazo Wild Orange tea swimming in me that we might have to go over to the side of the boat. And,
Not a sponsor.
Yeah, drain the old lizard into the international waters that surround us here on the Twos Cruise.
Yeah.
Where we talk about college football. So as you know, we've been playing mini games all throughout our previous versions of this Tuesday show. Today, we're going to give one more a chance to breathe.
Okay.
We got some suggestions about this. We honestly had it in the queue long before anyone suggested it. But since this is more of a nautically themed show, since we talk about being on the open seas, we decided that we would play a game of Battleship.
Battleship! 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 Milton Bradley's great game of strategy. It's loaded with action and suspense.
So here is what we are doing to keep this within a college football context.
Okay.
What we've done is you've got a board. It's a smaller board than the actual Battleship board. Otherwise, we'd be here all afternoon.
Yeah.
4x4. A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, 4, got our own little grids, and randomly placed on each of our respective boards are four preseason assumptions that we made that are really on the verge of sinking. And so part of this game is sort of just to do the humanitarian thing and put it out of its misery.
Oh, man. Yeah. Our bad preseason takes.
But also, we're competitive individuals, and we're trying to win the game and sink the others first.
Oh, very true.
So what you're going to do is, I hope you've got your board ready. I haven't seen it.
I do.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to guess. We might have to flip a coin here to see who goes first. I've got the sounds queued up. We're ready to go. We're going to make this as close to the real thing as we can. Mm-hmm. You and I are quite literally going to play College Football Battleship, Dan.
Yes, and what should we call a college football version of Battleship?
I can't take credit for this. You have to unveil the official name of this.
So it's the best name that either involves ship or battle. So we're playing Arnaz Battleship.
Arnaz Battleship, right?
Yes. Were you a fan of his Notre Dame career? Short-lived pro career? He was a Tim Rattay era 49ers for everybody following at home.
Arnaz Battleship.
Arnaz Battleship. Did you like him?
I like the name.
Oh, man, you didn't like watching him.
I like the name. He was a receiver, wasn't he?
He was.
Once he got to the pro game.
Correct. He was a dual threat quarterback in college.
Correct. Played quarterback, played receiver, played more receiver once he got to the league. And the name is cool.
It is very cool. Double major, it looks like, with a 3.2 GPA.
Not bad.
Which is one more major than I had, and he went to a better school than I did. So much respect.
Daniel,
yeah.
Are you ready to play Arnaz Battleship?
Battleship, Milton Bradley's great game of strategy. It's loaded with action and suspense.
I guess we could have gone with Bill Blanken Battleship, something like that, but
we could have.
Yeah, it's okay. Let's go. I'm not a huge A1 sauce fan, so let's go A2, Ty.
A2?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Nope.
No, ding I didn't means, hit anything.
Ding means you didn't hit anything.
Ding means it. Okay, let's go. You get to guess now, or do I get to go again?
I get to guess.
Okay.
I am going to guess. What do you guess?
A2.
I'll go far corner, D4. Yes.
Oh, there's a hit. Yeah, that's officially a hit.
What do we got?
So I thought Miami would win the Coastal
and
end up in the ACC championship game. It's not looking like that'll be the case, Ty. I thought that defense, which returned a good amount of guys, and an offense that was talented enough, and we didn't know before the season and when we recorded our ACC preview, would be Nikosi Perry or Jaren Williams. It ended up being Williams, but I guess I just did not foresee the offensive line and the mistakes and the catastrophes on both sides of the ball, the big play errors coming. And so I am officially sinking year one Manny Diaz hopes of going to an ACC championship game. And I don't know if the prognosis is amazing, but they should recruit well enough. He obviously deserves time to establish a culture, but I feel very wrong in thinking that Miami was going to be the team. So Miami's ACC championship game hopes, you are officially at the bottom of the ocean.
Well, if you look at Miami so far, 3-4 on the year, they've lost to Florida, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, the overtime one that we saw back in week 8 just a few days ago.
1-3 in the ACC.
1-3 in the ACC. On the schedule right now, we've got road games against Pitt and Florida State. We've got a home game against Louisville, home game against Florida International, and then they close out the year on the road at Duke. At least according to some projections, they are favored to win all of those games. I think the hardest, I guess, would be at Pitt. Maybe rivaled by
probably
Florida State. You know, both those games feel kind of the same to me. But
Pitt does something excellently well, and we'll get to that. Maybe, maybe not. And that I think you're right. At Pitt, we saw what happened to UCF there. I think that's the answer.
The thing that I look at Miami and say, and it isn't all that different from my own preseason projections, which, by the way, I mean, you take the hit for this one, but I was right there with you.
Yeah.
They needed to get more consistent quarterback play. And of course, they bring over Tate Martell, and, you know, Jaren Williams gets the start. There was a lot of praise with some of what he did early on. Manny Diaz got the hype stirred up down in Coral Gables. It just has not materialized. Has not materialized at all.
And in fairness, there are moments for Miami defensively where they look absurdly good. It's just that we're describing it as moments and not quarters or series is strung together or games or halves. It's moments. There are times where they just look otherworldly on defense. And that's, I mean, as up and down and as weird as the Coastal is, not good enough to be that moment to moment.
The one thing that I will point out, and then I promise I'll let you have your turn.
Yes.
Miami has lost all four of those games by one score or less.
Mm-hmm.
4 points against Florida, 3 points on the road at North Carolina, 7 points against Virginia Tech, and of course the overtime game that they lost this past weekend to Georgia Tech. Second order wins, which is something that our friend Bill Connolly tracks, has Miami at 5.4. Meaning, if things go a little bit differently, this could be a 5-win team as opposed to a 3-win team. Could obviously be a lot different of a story.
Ifs and buts, Ty. Ifs and buts.
Bigger picture, as we look forward now, where does Miami go from here? How do you feel about Miami's prospects?
Well, the offensive line has to improve. We're talking after the season, talking next offseason. The offensive line has to improve. There have been really nice, again, the word is moments, for Jaren Williams. I think they're going to continue to recruit well. And it's a year 0-1. It was an unexpected retirement from a head coach. And so there is something that is incredibly deserving about saying, okay, this all happened unexpectedly. It was all thrown together sort of last second, unexpectedly. Again, it's going to be okay. I think losing to Georgia Tech is completely indefensible. Losing in the way that they, you know, lost to Virginia Tech late, also sort of indefensible. So I don't know what, I know there's like win expectancies and stuff like that. If Miami can get to the point where they just win where they should, they're like a 9-3 team. They're just not there yet.
All right. Your turn. You guessed A2 incorrectly. See if you can do better this time.
All right. Let's stick with the 2 theme and we'll go B2.
Ah. You got me mano a mano here.
Yeah.
Playing Arnaz Battleship.
Mm-hmm.
I have here maybe my most controversial opinion. It was certainly one that I was very confident about going into the season. And that was that this Michigan team was not only going to win the Big Ten, but also make the college football playoff.
Whoa, kidoke. Okay, a lot to peel back here.
This has not worked out well.
No.
Suffice to say, but Michigan is 5-2. They're 5-2, at least in terms of a win-loss record. That's better than Miami. You could do worse than 5-2.
Correct.
Of Michigan's 5 remaining games, though, given the way they look on offense, you could see like 4 of them being competitive. I don't think that's too big of a stretch. The issue that we say that is because the new offense has yet to click. That may still happen. There were moments down the stretch against Penn State where it kind of clicked. They didn't give up. They played hard. They probably should have tied it if they don't have a drop pass in the end zone. They just need more of those clicks. Need to get it together earlier on in some of these games. Right now, they are 5th in the country, and this is something that I know you and I have texted about. 5th in the country in starting field position.
Yeah.
Yet it's just that their offense is super inefficient at the moment. They're not getting any bang for the buck there. They need to find a way to correct that, and they need to start by at least looking a little bit more organized on offense. Maybe the defense hasn't been quite up to the level that we've seen in past years. It's still really good and still more than good enough to give this offense good field position. It's just a shame they can't turn it into more.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where on first downs, can they get a 6-yard run? It's not complicated things. It's not cracking this giant mystery that is football. It's basic things that they can't consistently string together. They find themselves in third and long a little bit too often. And even though they've been okay on third and long, they're finding themselves there far too much. It's not like they're playing opponents on their skill level.
Right.
Penn State is, Ohio State is, but the rest of the year, They're more talented than a team like Wisconsin. At the very least, they should be losing that game last second. They should be in that game for 4 straight quarters. And so we've sort of talked ad nauseum about the Michigan issues this year, but it's self-inflicted. It's the turnovers. It's the fumbles. I think they have, they're comparable in terms of turnovers already to where they were last year all year. And so You can only give the ball away so much before you just say, I guess we're just doomed. And I don't think Michigan full. They may well beat, you know, the back half of their schedule until Ohio State in an exciting way. But something is just off. And I was with you in the optimism. And I'm not going to say that we should be tearing down the Michigan season, because they could go 9-3 and win a bowl and go 10-3. That's not, you know, a crazy, crazy thought. But they're way behind Ohio State. And that was what the change was meant to affect. The distance then closed the gap between Michigan and Ohio State. And that's just, it's not a reality.
That was part of the reason for the optimism, because, of course, Ohio State bringing in a new coach, even though he was already on the staff.
Michigan dudes.
Right. Whenever you swap out a legend, it's tough. It's a coin flip to begin with when you swap out a coach, and especially when you're replacing a legend. It's just you never know what kind of traction you're going to get on that front. And they have not done much to close that gap. On offense, they've looked very disorganized. Here's what they look like now. I mentioned that four of the five games are competitive. Mm-hmm. The big Notre Dame game this weekend, it's at home, it's at night. They're around a point and a half favorite in that game, which, okay, a little confusing to me, but fine. Tough game. Easily losable. They're at Maryland the week after Notre Dame. I think they should have that one in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
But then, final 3 weeks of the year, home against Michigan State. That's a rivalry.
They should win, but yes, it is.
Who knows? At Indiana, in between Michigan State and Ohio State, that's a letdown look-ahead spot that we've been talking up since June.
Mm-hmm.
And Indiana ain't bad. That's a losable game.
Right.
And then, obviously, Ohio State to close out the year. Obviously thought maybe it would be a little bit of a closer scenario when we got to week 14, when we talked about it again back in June. But right now, Ohio State does look like they're leaps and bounds better.
And in terms of ifs and buts at the same time, they go to the wire against Army. And what do we know now about Army?
Yeah, nah.
Not particularly great this year.
Nah.
So that looks worse. They might be a top 70, 80 team. That looks worse right now. They blow out Rutgers. They have a great defensive game against Iowa, and Iowa's a tough team. Illinois, even though now in retrospect we've seen Illinois beat Wisconsin. Penn State, if Ronnie Bell catches that ball, you have, what, a tie game late against a James Franklin team. That's a good spot to find yourself in.
Yeah, it is.
But it's just, it's ifs and buts again. And it could go either way for Michigan at this point. And I'm still excited to see which direction it goes. I'm not fully willing to give up on an exciting Michigan, but we should sink those playoff hopes down to the bottom of the ocean.
What do we think about Michigan now moving forward? Because
after the season, big picture.
If we focus that periscope in on the future state of this offense, Shea Patterson gone after this year. But elsewhere on the offense, maybe aside from the line, which we know is a veteran group, there's a lot of young skill talent on this roster. So a lot of those guys will be back. Presumably Dylan McCaffrey will be back as well. And the new starting quarterback in
junior,
2020, he will have had a year in this system now under Josh Gattis. Provided they hold on to Gattis, where do we come down on this Michigan offense moving forward?
I think they'll hold on to Gattis. I think it'll go up. I do. I have high hope. They've recruited well enough. Zach Charbonnet seems pretty promising. A bigger back as a true freshman thrown into it. I think fumble issues can be dealt with. You know, a big toss-up will be what happens with the junior receivers, Tariq Black, Nico Collins, and Donovan Peoples-Jones, and see, you know, they're obviously not maximizing their value. So I imagine a couple of them at least will be back, just in hopes of proving that they have NFL draft potential. So I'm going to remain bullish on Michigan, and I know they're in Columbus next season, but the schedule should be, do you have their schedule?
Not in front of me, no.
20 schedule in front of you? It seems like it'll be okay. I still am hopeful that when you consistently year over year have an excellent defense and all you need to do is produce an above average offense with talent, there's a lot to still be hopeful for.
Well, maybe we'll talk about LSU in a little bit.
Perhaps.
Maybe we'll talk about LSU in a little bit. And it was a similar story there for a long time.
At Washington, Michigan, September 5th, to open the 2020 season.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, so who's up? I guess I'm up.
Yes.
I am up to guess. I am going to go... Battleship. Where was I? I was D4 last time.
Correct.
I am going B4. Crap. I thought maybe you did the corner thing where you stacked them all in the corner.
No. I'll give you another shot, though, Ty. I feel bad.
Okay. D3.
Ah. Wow. Like Shea Patterson.
I'm trying.
Just a miss after a miss.
That was great. I'm trying to work my way out from the corner.
I'll give you one more shot, Ty.
Another
one? I feel terrible. Yeah.
All right, let's go. We'll go D1. Yes,
there's
we go.
Your hit.
I knew you had another one in that D column. I knew you would do that.
I do. Yeah. I'm D for Dan. Your hit and my miss, really, and this is very specific, is an actual miss, is Mississippi State.
Oh.
I was very high on year two of the Joe Moorhead experience, moving past their what I thought was going to be the end of very bad quarterback play. I thought they'd have a complete team, returning the receivers that they did, returning an underrated running back in Kylan Hill, returning a pretty experienced offensive line. And I know, you know, losing Montez Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons was huge, but good linebackers, upperclassmen on the line, some experience in the secondary, not a lot. I knew that was going to be a question coming in, but I didn't fully see how they could fall off the way that they have, obviously. You lose to Tennessee, and you have to have a sit-down. You have to have a conversation. And so Keaton Thompson leaves and comes back, and Tommy Stevens comes in, and you know he and Joe Moorhead have this rapport, and Garrett Schrader, this blue-chip quarterback, starts getting time. I still felt pretty good about them 2-3 weeks into the season, but the mistakes on offense and, God, the last... I mean, I was saying the entirety of that Auburn experience has me so soured on the 2019 season for the Bulldogs that I have to write it off. I have to sink that take to the bottom of the ocean. The picks against Tennessee and coming out of a bye week and to look that listless on offense, just mistake prone. And even when they have completed passes to their own team, they've been okay. They've been pretty good. But that's a pretty big qualifier when you throw the picks that they do. So, yeah, they've been thrown on and have had, you know, the continued struggles throwing where this was the best pass defense in the SEC last season.
Yeah.
And they did actually have some success, even though the score would indicate otherwise against LSU. I thought they did a pretty good job. They tightened up in the red zone against LSU early, and it was a close game for that first half. But I didn't see it. I had a lot of faith that this Mississippi State team would build on last year's experience, and they haven't.
Yeah, the Tennessee game on the road. Granted, on the road in Tennessee, not the easiest place in the world to play, but that offense, offense was abysmal. 10 points against Tennessee is just not good enough.
Three picks, yeah.
You look at the schedule now, they've already got four losses. They've lost three in a row. At Texas A&M this coming week, there's a road tilt against Arkansas in there, which should hopefully be a win for their sake. Bye week.
They will.
Then they come back home against Alabama. They've got a game in there against Abilene Christian. They should win that one easily. Mm-hmm. Then they close out with the Egg Bowl at home. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion at this point that Mississippi State's making a bowl game at all, which is not a good look for Joe Moorhead in year two. Certainly the line has not helped these quarterbacks much, but
no,
you could argue the quarterbacks haven't helped the quarterbacks much either.
Also true.
So it's just not really been a great situation. We talk about Michigan's disorganized offense. This is sort of on a whole different level. It just feels like they don't know at all what's going on, and the quarterbacks in particular have not helped.
I've liked Garrett Schrader some. I think there is promise there. You know, being thrown in as a true freshman, freshman truths, as we've talked about, they're just going to be lumpy moments. I just thought everything else around him would be okay.
Well,
I just thought they'd be led by defense and Kylan Hill, but now you can just stack the box.
You can
the passing threat just doesn't really exist.
It doesn't. And to further your point, Garrett Schrader, you look at the way he's built, the way he can move, he's got a pretty good arm. He would be, should be, the prototypical Joe Moorhead quarterback. He would seemingly fit exactly what they're trying to do.
Definitely.
Why it hasn't clicked, I don't know. I don't know if it's the line. I don't know what's going on, but it certainly has not clicked. And we can sink this one to the bottom of the ocean, Dan. Where do we come down on Joe Moorhead 2020 and beyond at Mississippi State? Because right now we've got rumors about the whole Rutgers opening. Maybe he'd kind of a weird rumor to begin with, but we know he's got familiarity with the Northeast.
Yeah, if he has familiarity with the Northeast, that's why he shouldn't go to Rutgers.
Exactly.
And as much talent as there actually is in New Jersey, there isn't talent overall running the Rutgers athletic department. It's just a terrible situation. So I think he's smart enough not to jump to Rutgers. I like Joe Moorhead. I like his ability. I think he should resonate with recruits. He should be able to improve a culture if it needs improving, which obviously after the way they've lost this year, Mississippi State probably does. He's resonating with recruits. They have a top 20 class at the moment. They have, it looks like, 6 or 7 blue chip guys committed verbally right now. And I'm still going to say, because of that home environment, because of his intellect, I'm willing to write it off as, you know, whiffing on the Tommy Stevens thing and pushing the chips in with Garrett Schrader and hoping for the best in terms of developing guys on defense with what I still think is a pretty good defensive coordinator in Bob Shoup.
Yeah, if the Tommy Stevens thing didn't work out, this was always a risk.
Yeah.
The defensive component is quite troubling, but, you know, it is what it is at this point. So we're going to sink that to the bottom of the ocean. You gave me 3 shots at you before I hit one. So I'm just going to let you go until you get one, Dan.
Okay. I guess A2 before. Let's go C2 because I got a B2 last time.
Nope.
All right. Nope. I got to get away from 2. C1.
You got it.
Yes.
You got it. All right. This, I think, will be an interesting discussion between you and I. I came into the season, and I don't know if I ever formally verbalized this.
I think you did when we talked about tears.
Yeah. I think that's right. We talked ad nauseum before the season, even during the season, about the tears of college football programs.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019. And I sort of came into the season with it being a foregone conclusion that it was going to be Alabama and Clemson playing for the national championship and that one of those two teams is going to win. And obviously, if they play, someone's got to win. But I didn't really give anyone else a chance. Ohio State, starting over in some respect with the new coach. Oklahoma, the defense has been mud the last couple years, hasn't really mattered. How good their offense is.
I think mud is actually a little bit better than what Oklahoma's defense may put teams through.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
There have been other teams, right? That you could throw in there as well. Just like I didn't give anybody else a chance. LSU. LSU plays in the same division as Alabama. I didn't give them a chance. Well, now, Dan, here we are through 8 weeks of the season, and you can make a really good case for Ohio State. Certainly with where their offense is and how their defense has improved from a year ago.
Sure.
I think they're number one in the SP Plus, if I look correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Oklahoma playing as good, if not better, than they ever have on offense with an improved defense now that they brought Alex Grinch over from Ohio State.
Right.
And the LSU story, which again, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, we may actually talk about here momentarily, yeah. But the offense has been dynamic. Defense, defense hasn't been as good, but offensively, they've been lighting the world on fire. I think you can make a really good case for those five teams as your top tier of college football in this 2019. And that means no disrespect to Alabama, who has been outstanding behind Tua Tagovailoa, Najee Harris, and of course, their incredible wide receiving core and a really good defense. Has some injury, yeah. But it's still a really good defense. And the Clemson Tigers, which honestly, Trevor Lawrence has let me down a little bit this year.
Yeah.
I still think he's incredible. I still think he's got to be the top pick of the 2021 draft,
mm-hmm.
but has left me a little bit underwhelmed so far this year. The defense is good. Obviously, the skill talent's out there. They've been killing teams. But I think right now that is my top tier. I'm willing to sink that previous assumption to the bottom of the ocean and say that I think legit we've got a five-team race through eight.
So what's more pronounced to you? The fact that Alabama and Clemson haven't distanced themselves on their own tier, like something that they've done to themselves, that they've been able to control, or the fact that the teams that you mentioned, Oklahoma, LSU, and Ohio State, have impressed you so much that you have to put them on?
Is it
an Alabama-Clemson thing or the other three thing?
No, it's the other three thing.
Okay.
It's the other three thing. With what LSU's been able to do on offense, taking the college football world by storm, they've got the second mm-hmm. best offense, according to some of the metrics we look at. Nobody saw that coming. I don't care how much you believed in what they were going to try and do this year.
Right.
Nobody saw this for Joe Burrow breaking the school record halfway through the year. No mm-hmm. one saw this offense producing at this clip. So
literally showing their butt to the world.
Literally showing their butt to the world. Yeah. Oklahoma, I think we expected the offense, but as we said the last 2 years, just marginal improvement on defense would take them to a different stratosphere.
Yeah.
I think they've done that. And then Ohio State, look, Ohio State's playing next level. Justin Fields has been, as Reballer Dane has told us time and again, maybe the best quarterback in Ohio State history.
Ever!
Through like seven games or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very impressed by what I've seen from those three teams.
So, I think it's both. And I don't think you touched on some of the concerning parts of Clemson and Alabama enough. I think those three teams that you mentioned, I think, are instilling a lot more confidence at this point than either Alabama or Clemson. Now, neither one of those teams has been tested by a top-tier, uber-talented team. They both play Texas A&M, I believe. That's a common opponent. But Alabama has given up more on defense than we're used to. And honestly, it's such a tightrope. The margin for error is so slim when you're, you know, basically revamping a coaching staff every year, dealing with injuries and playing freshmen. And now it's a great problem to have if you're Alabama, that you're still Nick Saban hiring who he wants and recruiting who he wants, not a matter of who's going to go there. And Clemson, I wonder if there's an element of, what's the line from Social Network? Like, do I have your attention? Like, you have the minimal amount of my attention.
Right.
I wonder if the medium size of Clemson's schedule has Clemson minds wandering. Like, you're not going to get the focus. We've seen them have to take on, what, Lamar Jackson. We've seen them have to take on a good Virginia Tech team that was within, what, a touchdown in the ACC championship a few years ago. We've seen, you know, Miami teams, Florida State teams, and there's just, I don't think there's anybody that is captivating to Clemson in the ACC that I think it starts affecting the way that they're focused. I think it starts affecting the way that you get punched early on in the season and it wakes you up and you're really locked in.
Right.
And Clemson's not there. And I don't know if they will be until they make it to the playoff. It didn't really affect them last year. They beat Notre Dame by 27.
Yeah. And that's the cautionary tale, because we said the same thing almost verbatim about Clemson a year ago, and how, oh, do they have the killer instinct? They've been killing teams.
There's
ever since that
though.
1-point victory on the road at North Carolina, destroyed Florida State, just beat Louisville by 35.
Yeah.
On the remaining schedule, Boston College, Wofford, NC State, and Wake, before a more interesting game than you might have expected, to be honest, against South Carolina.
Yeah. And the Clemson The Clemson roster, though, last year was filled with dudes who had been through those wars. Look, you look up all three levels of the defense. You look at some of the offensive linemen, Mitch Hyatt, these guys that, you know, are leaders that are able to keep a team locked in. And it's just, it feels like a transition year for Clemson. Doesn't mean they can't win the national championship.
No, exactly.
But the feeling, the moment we're recording this, there is a different feel. There is, you know, the coaches are trying to work in as many players as possible in closer games, you know, against North Carolina in the first half. Or Trevor Lawrence is going a little bit rogue to see what he can get away with throwing into coverage. It feels like there's a little bit of boredom until they can get onto a bigger stage.
Yeah, and by the way, just to clarify, the reason I say South Carolina is a little bit more interesting than I thought, it's because they beat Georgia. And I didn't think South Carolina had that in them. Now, I don't know if they're going to beat Clemson. The game is at home, but
I know.
Let me ask you this, and then we'll move on here.
Yeah,
is this the new norm now in college football, where we've been used to talking about Alabama, Clemson the last couple seasons? Is it the new norm now that we're going to talk about Ohio State, LSU, Oklahoma? We can throw Georgia in the mix as well in that very top tier of college football teams.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's a team right now that I see as being a full-time threat for years moving forward just because of the level of talent. And Georgia is sort of teetering right now, at least at the time we're recording this. But I would certainly have Ohio State right there. I would certainly have LSU right there. And here's the thing about LSU, and maybe we'll get to LSU later. I don't know. I haven't seen the board. But there's something, if you're looking long-term at the Tigers, you go to Alabama and you're like, okay, you can be the next Tua. Great. They have a five-star quarterback. They've got Tua's little brother. You can be the next Dwayne Haskins. Justin Fields transfers there. You can be the next Marcus Mariota. You can be the next Matt Leiner. LSU finally has that. Mm. They have never had that in the modern era of some guy who's there multiple years, producing on a high level. You can be the next Joe Burrow is a selling point that LSU has not had in the modern era. And that to me feels very dangerous.
Okay. Shall we move on?
Sure. You can be the next Kyler. You can be the next Baker Mayfield. Great. Jalen Hurts is there.
All right. So
is it my guess or your guess?
No, I'm up.
Okay.
I guessed D1 last time. We'll move off the D column. We'll go to, I'll go A1. All right. Your turn.
You missed it. Looking. What have I already hit? I've already hit a C. I'll go D column D3.
D3. No. Okay. I am going B3. Yes.
Oh,
what do we got?
Job. So the take that I'm going to send to the bottom of the ocean, I had, and this was, I'll qualify it, this was a worst case thing for me. Pitt may win as few as 4 games.
Hey, we caught hell for this one.
Well, they just won their 5th.
We caught hell for this one from some Pitt fans who actually listened to the show.
Yeah, we did. And I am wrong. The worst case has now been eclipsed. Now, Pitt has had a very strange season. They lose late, but with a chance to beat Penn State, right? With a Hail Mary that in the back of the end zone to tie it. They lose late there. They demonstrably lose to Virginia. They win in very strange fashion to an underwhelming Duke team. I think that was on the road. Strange game, but a decent enough win at Syracuse in the Carrier Dome. Always tough on a Friday night. And their defense has been the best thing in the Coastal. It's either their defense or Virginia's defense. Their defense, especially doing one specific thing well, which is just causing havoc, which is an actual stat. It's, you know, tackles for loss and sacks and forced fumbles, stuff like that. They are riddling teams with havoc. And the defensive front is so strong, especially on the inside. I'm going to stand by my doubts on the offense because I think the offense is still full on bad. But if you do something really, really well in the Coastal, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
And I was also down on this defense. It has been an underwhelming defense these past few years with, you know, a successful defensive coach in Pat Narduzzi. And they now look like a top 25, top 30 defense nationally. And again, they harm teams.
Yeah.
And that's good enough. And I didn't see it coming.
Here's what I find interesting about Pitt, other than the reasons that you just outlined.
Yeah.
Maybe the most eclectic named
mm-hmm.
wide receiver corps in all of college football. We got Maurice French leading the way.
Yeah.
With 56 catches. That's French with two Fs at the end.
Double Fs. Yep.
Taysir Mack.
Mm-hmm. Taysir Mack.
Taysir Mack. Excuse me.
You're good.
Nakia Griffin-Stewart. Will Gregg. Dontavious Butler-Jenkins. Shockey Jacques-Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Got some interesting names in there.
Yeah, DBJ, SJL, NGS. NGS is a tight end, by the way. Good team on defense.
On defense. And, playing in a lot of close games. A lot of close games.
Listen. It's going to be a weird back half of their schedule. I see a lot of 30 to 29s, a lot of 19-18s, a lot of, you know, the ACC regrets the error kind of games, the back five games of their schedule. It's Miami at Georgia Tech. Should beat Georgia Tech, even if it's on the road. Virginia Tech on the road. Should be tough for them. North Carolina feels like a toss-up. I also think that they've already played three times. And Boston College without Anthony Brown. So winning two or three of them, 7-8 wins.
Not bad,
Seems realistic.
All five of those games are projected as one-score games.
Wow. Okay.
All five projected as one-score games. And they've already played in one, two, three, four, five. Five of their seven games so far have been one-score games.
Yeah, and that Delaware game, that close call against Delaware, I think was with Nick Patty, their backup quarterback, playing. But
yeah, right.
Pitt games are just going to be entertaining all year long, like South Carolina last season, where it's going to be competitive one way or the other.
Might get a Kenny Pickett, like, 300-yard game. Maybe not.
Maybe not. Okay. My turn to guess, I believe.
Your turn to guess, yes.
All right, let's go A4.
A4. Now, you know what? I'll give you another one. You're sniffing, though. You're getting
ready. Am I?
You're sniffing. You are sniffing.
I think I did A2 and A4, so let's do a letdown look ahead sandwich here with A3.
There it is. He got it. You got the LSU one.
Oh.
You finally got it.
God bless.
You finally got it. So here, the preseason assumption for me was that LSU's offensive upgrade that we heard about, right? The shiny new offense that...
opening things up.
Yeah, that was opening things up. It was going to be new and revolutionary and different in the bayou. And yeah, I just felt like it was BS. I felt like it was BS because how many times before have we heard about some sort of LSU offensive change or upgrade or a new twist or wrinkle that was going to make it better? And how many times
I'm
going to
lose
failed?
The weight this time, Ty. I'm really going to do it. I'm going to get my act together. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to work out all the time. I'm going to get off the couch. This is the year my New Year's resolution of a wide open offensive life plan comes together.
Previous attempts at this had left a lot to be desired. So the skepticism, I don't think, was unwarranted. They've had issues on offense for a long time. It's been a thing. And it's just the defense has been so good that you can paper over the offense.
Right.
Well, Coach O makes the decision, going to make some renovations, heard a lot about it. Every now and then, Dan, we have pleasant surprises like this in college football where
we do.
Some grandiose plan works. If you told me before the year that we'd be midway through, Joe Burrow would have 29 touchdown passes and set a school record, Joey Dirt, by the way, completing 80% of his passes. 79.4%, excuse me, to be exact.
Filthy.
79.4% of 218 attempts have been completions so far for Joey Dirt.
That's like 2008 Colt McCoy level.
Yeah. His receivers have been money. Justin Jefferson has caught 90% of his targets.
Oh, God.
I don't know what the average is. Yeah, I don't know what the average is in college football, but that ain't it, okay?
Right.
530 yards a game. I believe I might have saw at least 50 points a game. I don't know if that's right or not, but it could be. This has been, by any measure, any metric, an incredible success. So I hereby sink all of that skepticism to the bottom of the sea, bury it in the Marianas Trench, whatever it's called, in the middle of the Atlantic.
Good call.
Just bury it down there. And I am happy to progress in this new world where LSU has the offense, their receivers are finally being tapped into in a meaningful way, and suddenly we've got a new contender that has risen in the SEC West.
Well, it always seemed like they had the talent to do this. And maybe it's not specific for this style of offense. Like, you're not going to take Leonard Fournette and turn him into a full-on all-purpose back and split him out. And you know, when you have a talent like that, perhaps you have to run a power-centric offense. I get that. But you'll always have speed. You should always be able to recruit linemen. This is an LSU program that consistently, through thick and thin, is recruiting top 4, 6, 7 classes, right?
Sure.
So this wasn't an overhaul like Michigan was so entrenched in older offensive ways, and Michigan has struggled to move the ball like LSU has, but just the amount of team speed does not feel like it's equal in Ann Arbor. Like, this was always lurking, Ty. Much like, isn't it Godzilla sitting under the trenches, Japan,
sure.
Mothra, all these monsters are always there. You know that they're there to, I guess, protect humanity. And I guess the same way Joe Brady is here to protect our eyes and give us fun football to watch.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an overhaul. It was simply, let's do something that makes a little bit more sense. We have what looks to be a pretty good quarterback. We saw Joe Burrow show flashes last year, make plays. We've recruited well along, you know, into the receiving core. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire showed flashes last season as well. They look balanced. The big thing is, it's just LSU committing to it and everybody getting on the same page. They're bringing in this guy. We're overhauling. We're going to ride or die with this offensive plan. And so far, it's a lot of riding, Ty. So to bring it full circle, it's like LSU realized that their family is entirely made up of personal trainers, that maybe they should just do the right thing and lean on the expertise and speed of everybody in their house, because it all always made sense.
It will be interesting to see what happens moving forward into the future, into 2020.
Yeah. So Joe Brady and Joe Burrow. Yeah.
You know, we'll have to see if this is sustainable, but at least in this present iteration with Joe Burrow and a really good receiving core, young receiving core at that.
Yeah.
They've been dynamic. And
yeah,
there are no two ways about it.
And they've been healthy too. They've been healthy. Terrace Marshall has missed some time, and I know they've been beat up defensively a little bit, but the offense, by and large, has had a pretty good run of health. And so I'm encouraged, because as mentioned before, you can be the next Joe Burrow. You can be the next Justin Jefferson. You can be the next Jamar Chase. You can be the next Clyde, whatever, that they're going to be able to recruit, not necessarily better, but more accurately.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's bury that take. New year, same old LSU. Promises uncapped.
I'm happy to bury that one. All right. My turn here.
Yeah.
I will go, where was I? B3 last time. I will guess C1 this time. That would have been for
inching.
The win.
You're inching, but no, not quite.
That would have been for the win. All right, you go.
Okay, so I got the A3 sandwich last time. Let's go C4, because it's explosive.
Tied 3-3 here. Okay. Drama on the high seas.
Guess.
I'm going to go C2. Yes!
You sunk my battleship.
What do we got here?
Okay, so I was skeptical, and this is a team we've already mentioned a couple times. I was skeptical of crowning Ohio State before the year. And I think I was more on board with the Michigan thing. I may even picked Michigan to come out of the Big Ten. The fact that in Ann Arbor, experienced quarterback, you know, bringing a lot of guys back on offense. But Ohio State, in hiring a new coach, in bringing in a couple of new defensive coaches, Jeff Hafley as a co-coordinator, losing Greg Schiano, bringing in Greg Mattis and Al Washington from Michigan. I was just thinking to myself, it feels like a lot of change, especially with throwing a transfer quarterback who's going to be immediately eligible, decorated as he was as a recruit, that I almost felt like assuming Ohio State as another 10, 11, 12 win team with all those changes, with a quarterback thrown in without any time in the system, it was a lot to ask, and almost underappreciated how good Dwayne Haskins was last year to assume that there can just be another Dwayne Haskins or another great quarterback at Ohio State. So I was skeptical, and I was wrong to be. Because right now, Ohio State looks like they're the best alley-oop team, that the offense is doing their own defense so many favors. The defense is doing their own offense a ton of favors. We talk about the speed and competence and just lane integrity on every play and the experience of the secondary. Damon Arnette coming back. We saw how they were affected a little bit losing Browning this past week and not playing against Northwestern. But they're just all over the place. The defense doesn't have to get all that sweaty. And that just softens up the other team's defense. And you can't say enough good things right now about where Ohio State is at, just because they look like the most consistently complete team in the country. The opponents aren't there yet.
No, they're not.
They were not tested in a big Power 5 way like they had been against Oklahoma those couple times, or even TCU last season, at least when we thought TCU was going to be pretty good. So I am, you know, very curious about the back half of their schedule with, you know, some seriously good defenses. But they've passed every test with A++ colors.
Justin Fields so far.
Yeah.
70% of his passes, 70.7% of his passes, excuse me, have been completions. Mm-hmm. 22 touchdown passes to just one interception, which is amazing. Yeah. First year as a starter. And he's also run for a little over 7 yards a clip and 8 touchdowns. That's a pretty big footprint, especially when combined with J.K. Dobbins, who's also rushing for over 7 yards at a clip with 7 touchdowns of his own, especially when you look at some of these wide receivers who are doing their part to catch most of their targets.
Yeah, no standout there.
No standout.
The way that they've had these past couple years. No above and beyond number one option. And, you know,
but very consistent.
Olave, but
very consistent. And part of that is obviously due to what Justin Fields is able to do.
Yes.
And his accuracy throwing the football. But it's just a really consistent effort across the board. To your point, it's not just the offense. It's not just the defense. It is both of them working in tandem, which I think has been so impressive to me.
If they are the most complete team in the country, how would you game plan? What does a win over Ohio State look like if it is a team that is not Alabama or Clemson or Oklahoma, that, you know, the teams remaining on their schedule, which I'm sure you have in front of you because this is an item of yours, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Michigan are the big ones.
Yeah.
What is that recipe? What is the guideline to beating a team this complete?
Well, you've certainly got to have a power defense. And there are three of them here. There are three of them in Wisconsin, Penn State, and Michigan. You got to do something to disrupt that timing that Justin Fields has right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have enough speed as a defense that you can contend with his legs. And I think all three have that as well. So I think it starts up front. You got to do something to create disruption. And you also have to be very thrifty with the football. I don't think Jack Cohn is that quarterback. Shea Patterson probably isn't that quarterback. And to be honest, I don't know if Sean Clifford is either. I don't know how much I trust any of them to not make mistakes against a really good, really fast defense. Mm-hmm. Can you run the football effectively against Ohio State? Michigan hasn't been great running the football.
No.
Wisconsin is pretty good in most cases.
Yeah.
Penn State, still a work in progress. We don't know what kind of voodoo they're working on.
Right.
So I have questions about all three of those opponents. I think you got to create some disruption, though, on defense. Otherwise, you have no chance.
I think the answer is Wisconsin. And this is this week, so we'll preview it. It's slowing the game down. It's getting to third and two and getting every single one of those third and twos. It's wearing down defenses, getting them frustrated, keeping the offense off the field, and making, honestly, making Justin Fields see ghosts. My favorite phrase from last season. It's having a defense that can show one thing and then drop into another. And not that Wisconsin necessarily plays the most convoluted, complicated defense, but I think Jim Leonard's done an incredible job. And they, you see the teams that they're able to shut out, which to me, even though they're not all great teams, they shut out Michigan State. That's not insignificant. And there's so much focus and there's so much tenacity to this Wisconsin defense, even with the Illinois loss and the way that they lost. I still think the high end of Wisconsin is probably the most likely upset candidate because of the way that they can limit possessions potentially. And if they can get those third and shorts, that's danger. And like we saw what Army did against Oklahoma last season, where all of a sudden you have seven possessions to win instead of your normal 14. That to me is the interesting way to beat Ohio State. And not it's an impossible tightrope, but that's the tightrope.
I think we're both in agreement that based on their blue chip ratio, their number of just really highly regarded recruits that have come through Columbus, combined with the fact that the new coach isn't going anywhere and Justin Fields has got at least another year.
Right.
I think we feel pretty good about Ohio State and the health of this program in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Dan. So I guess technically I've won, but there's one more here.
All right, one more for you. We're completists.
Yes.
I did C4 last time for explosives. B4, because it's a word.
Nope.
Oh, now this is just getting embarrassing. This is garbage time.
Just start plowing through all the rows now.
Okay, D4?
D4. There we go.
Close to D Ford.
There we go. Oh, going out on a high note here.
Cross the finish line. Everybody's giving me sympathy applause.
I am burying to the bottom of the ocean my longstanding relationship with TCU.
Oh, don't do it.
I am burying it, Dan. I'm out.
It's a setback, Ty. It's a setback.
I went pretty close to the line of saying that TCU is back. Of course, we all remember their legendary Cheez-It Bowl victory over Cal.
Yeah.
And we knew the stat going into this year that TCU usually follows up seasons like last year with something like 10 or 11 wins.
Right. They get their act together.
They get it together. And especially this year with seven starters back on offense. Plus, they were really banged up last year to the point where they didn't even have a spring game this year.
Things would average out. Things, you know, health would suddenly progress to a reasonable level.
So there was a lot to be excited about there. Plus, in terms of yardage allowed on a per game basis and per play basis last year, TCU was the best in the Big 12 conference. So there were signs there.
Yeah, they finished with the top 25, 30 defense, something like that.
They had three freaks on Bruce Feldman's annual freak list. Like, there was a lot to be excited about this year.
Yeah, their freak quotient was quite high.
Well, Daniel, 3-3 at the moment.
Yeah.
The defense has given up a ton of big plays.
Yeah.
On offense, they cannot throw.
We saw that skillet matchup, Ty. We all saw it.
We all saw it. You might say, well, they don't throw because they've got really good running backs and it's not an offense based on the pass. And sure, maybe I agree to an extent. But when they have to throw, they really stink. They're just not good at it.
No.
They've got five losable games left against Texas, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma. I could see any one of those being a loss. I'm not saying they're going to lose all of them, but eight losses is very much at least outside chance at this point for TCU. That's the depths to which we have unfortunately now progressed.
Yeah, you can't whiff on quarterback. This is the most obvious statement that perhaps we'll ever make, but they've had what, 1.5 good quarterbacks since Andy Dalton? You had a really high-level Trevon Boykin and a definitely good Kenny Trill. But, the Sean Robinson thing, Justin Rogers and his injury, they've recruited, it seems well, but it's just, you can't whiff. And I know they're starting a true freshman. I know that there are going to be issues, but they still have two really good running backs, Darius Anderson and Shewo Alonolua. Got it.
You got it.
And this is not a tough Big 12 year. This is not, you know, loaded for bear with like, oh, this quarterback's going to throw 4,000 yards. This quarterback's going to throw 4,000 yards. Will Greer's gone. Alan Bowman's hurt at Texas Tech. Sam Ellinger's still good. Jalen Hurts is really good. Brock Purdy dropped 50 on him. But the rest of their schedule, Spencer Sanders, Charlie Brewer is good. Austin Kendall. Like, this is a schedule that should not have been a navigation issue. Losing to Kansas State in year one of Chris Klieman, Skylar Thompson, it shouldn't be happening with how complete in terms of talent they look at times.
Yeah.
But at times is not. The problem is also they're devolving into a pseudo half team, Ty.
Exactly.
Are they?
Exactly.
I just thought of something so mean, but I have to get out of my system, Ty. Are they Fort Western? I'm a bad person. I regret it, but I had to expunge it from my brain.
All I know is I look at what this team has done, and I hate to focus too much on the passing game.
Right.
I look at what this team has done, and I see that Max Duggan has 9 touchdowns to 0 interceptions. Alex Delton, only 1 interception on the year.
Maybe their best quarterback run of the season, Max Duggan.
Their quarterbacks have a 9-to-1 ratio. Why does it feel like they're not getting enough out of that passing game? And I know they're focused a lot on Darius Anderson and what's his name? Shewo
Onalua.
Onalua. Yeah. I got it. Sort of.
Mm-hmm. Sort of.
I know they're focused on that, but it does feel like they're almost devolved into a bit of a half offense as well. And
sure,
that's just no way to go about winning games. TCU for a long time was sort of like my favorite Big 12 team. They've let me down so much now that I don't know how I feel about them moving forward, and I'm very disgruntled.
I'm sorry, Ty, but I'm glad we got to talk it out. Bury that love to the bottom of the sea, and it's time to move on. We have abandoned all Central Time Zone purple teams.
Yes, we have.
Northwestern and TCU, and Kansas State's good, actually. They're a good story.
All right, there we go, Dan.
Battleship. Battleship, Milton Bradley's great game.
Arnaz Battleship, now officially in the books here on the Two's Cruise.
Did you see the Battleship movie?
No, I didn't.
I did not either. I looked up the Wikipedia plot, and that was enough.
Yeah, no, not definitely an appointment movie type situation.
Spent $220 million and domestically made 56.
That is not good.
I think it made up some money internationally, Ty, but it was like 5 people from Friday Night Lights, Brooklyn Decker, Rihanna, a guy from True Blood, and the movie involved aliens and force fields, proposals being dishonorably discharged, and war games. So,
okay.
Yeah. That was Battleship, apparently.
Well, this was Arnaz Battleship.
Yeah, way better.
Thank you to each and all for downloading the show. I am your captain, Ty Hildenbrandt. He is Lieutenant Dan Rubenstein. We will be back on Thursday to preview all of your Week 9 action. In the meantime, Daniel, enjoy the next couple days. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
I hope so.
Fair seas! Mateys. I'm Ty, he's Dan. Catch you all on Thursday morning. In the meantime, stay safe.
Peace!
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.